over.
Gay Valmont is joining us now. Hey, Gay, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I know you're going to be representing the Democratic side for Congress District 1.
News Radio 92.3, full team coverage with Chris and Austin, provided up-to-the-minute election results.
Joining me now, Jimmy Patronis. Hey, Jimmy, how you doing?
I couldn't be any better right now.
I'm looking at your numbers. You have 59.12% of the vote.
News Radio 92.3. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Like the sands through Carpenter's Creek, so are the days of our Pensacola. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
Our next item is item 26-859, Juvenile Curfew Ordinance.
An ordinance creating Chapter 8-3, Juvenile Curfew, of Title 8 of the Code of the City of Pensacola, Florida, providing for severability, repealing clause, and providing an effective date.
I need a motion and a second.
Allison Patton asking for a second of the motion to hear the issue of the curfew. Nobody answering.
All right. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Long time between getting a motion from Jared Moore and then no second.
I'll second it for discussion.
And she seconds it for discussion. Now, that might not seem like the most compelling way to start a radio show, but trust me, this winds up being not the greatest example of functioning government. So, we had the shooting on July 4th, July 5th, and, you all know about that in Pensacola. And as a result of that, where there were not just the shooting, but there was a lot of, it wasn't a teen takeover, but it was kind of like that. You had, hundreds of young people downtown late at night after midnight. This is where they were throwing the mortar fireworks around at each other and getting into squabbles and, having to get, kind of arrested if they committed crimes, stern talking to if they didn't. Later on, you actually had the shooting as well. Families were there until late, but they had kind of cleared out. And so, Palafox was a mess on July 4th, the evening. And after the shooting, quickly thereafter, both the mayor and the police chief came out and basically said, we think that we need to have a curfew because we do not have one. A lot of places have curfews. Not everybody has one. But, of course, the mayor had been saying we'd come forward with it. We had talked about the provisions of it, certain hours for, minors on the weekdays, on the weekends, no effect for 18-year-olds. There were exemptions, like if you're going to a church service or if you're coming home from work, or there was kind of a weird provision in there that if you're coming back from like an entertainment event, like a going to OWA or something is what I thought. It turns out I was for the fair, because when the fair hits, then people are kind of milling around sometimes. So there was a lot of exceptions, including if you're going to a political protest, like they want to protect people's religious liberties and their First Amendment rights. It's just, so it's all good. So then we come to the actual ordinance, and I didn't play, and I'm not going to play an awful lot of it, but you've got the socialists are here. They're upset about something every week. And they had already, been talking about things in the forum, a lot about flock cameras, and which is fine. Perfectly, they're right in the open forum. And then we get to the Veterans Memorial Park bathroom had already been decided, and it's nobody's happy about it, but at least we're getting something. And then we come to the curfew. We're a couple of hours into the council meeting at this point. And apparently there's going to be some issues with the curfew, which kind of caught me by surprise because I thought this was a fairly straightforward thing. So one of the, socialist folks, Declan McGurk, is going to get up there and talk about it. And others have also talked and said, look, we don't like this. It's going to be used to target black people. Curfews don't work. It's just another form of police power. Remember, they generally are defund the police types. I don't know if any particular one is always in that camp, but, they're kind of on that side. It's actually in the national platform. They want to get rid of the Senate and get rid of the presidency and get rid of the Supreme Court and get rid of the Department of War and get rid of ICE and all of this stuff. So they're not really pro-law enforcement in any way that you would understand it. And so, if there's a law enforcement tool, they don't like it, and that shows up in this case.
Pretextual stops are stops where the police use a minor infraction to investigate unrelated crime, and they often lead to an escalation of the interaction. And the person under investigation does not even have to be found guilty of said minor infraction for the cop to escalate the interaction. There just needs to be probable cause.
And by the way, pretextual stops, if you're not familiar with the concept, is like having the tail light out or having window tinting. You have infractions on the books that allow police to stop somebody, usually when they're driving. Usually it's not typically when somebody is walking, but, you know, it can be anything. You know, you have to have a reason to search somebody. You have to have a reason to stop them if they're driving. You know, you have to have some kind of a probable cause that there's some reason for law enforcement to get involved in that interaction. Well, having a pretext to other searches or to other investigations is what they're saying having a curfew is. You know, if you see somebody who looks too young, you'll have a pretext to stop them. They might not even be a minor, but if in the process of talking to them, you know, you can't really say smell marijuana anymore because marijuana is, you know, not a probable cause. The smell is not a probable cause anymore. But if something else gives you a sense that they're involved in criminal activity, then you could continue with the investigation, and if not, you can't. So the concept of pretextual stops is kind of an important one in policing to understand. You know, some people hate them. The police would say, hey, this is, we find a lot of bad things because, hey, you got a taillight out, or, you know, your headlights out, and, you know, you didn't stop fully at that stop sign, so we're going to stop you. We're not going to write you a ticket, but in the process, oh, look at that, a crack pipe on the seat. You know, like, that's how this stuff works an awful lot. But Declan Murray goes on and says,
so this ordinance, this curfew, provides the Pensacola Police Department with the perfect probable cause, the perfect pretextual stop. Because probable cause in this case is someone simply looking young enough to the officer. We also know that this is a curfew, so it's only applicable at night, which gives the police even more leeway to claim in court that this person looked young to them at a distance. So if you care about Pensacola's Black community, you'll vote no on this ordinance and any future ordinances that grant the police more power than they already have.
So if you're not a racist, they've made it really simple. If you're a racist, you like curfews. So obviously, you know, D.C. Reeves and Eric Winstrom are big fat racists. That's what he's implying, if not overtly saying. And anybody on council who supports this, like, hey, Jared Moore, you motioned for this. Are you sure you're not a racist? Allison Patton, you seconded it even for discussion. Are you sure you're not a racist? And, you know, if you care about Black people, then you vote against this ordinance because it will be used disproportionately against Black youth because, you know, most law enforcement is used against where there's crime. And a lot of times crime overlaps with areas that are lower socioeconomic status and or minority. And that's what they're concerned about, that historically this has been used against Black people a lot, among other things. And you heard the objection, which is not an unreasonable one, which is at night, how do you know that somebody's 17 versus 18? Yeah, I mean, curfew's at night. Curfew's not during the day. How do you know that, you know, because some 15-year-olds look 20 and some 20-year-olds look 15. I'm a 55-year-old who looks 17, I like to think in my head. So, you know, maybe I get stopped. I always think it's a great joy in my life when I get carted to the grocery store for alcohol. Like, woohoo, you know, good day. But that's like everybody doesn't look the exact age that they are. Some look older, some look younger. Younger, that's going to be a problem for enforcement, and especially, again, at night, which is feeding into their narrative that this is all a very gray kind of thing to enforce, and you have to ask them. You know, the evidence is not forthcoming, right? You have to almost violate the Fifth Amendment in order to ask somebody how old they are, right? Do they have the right to not tell you how old they are? Because if you stop somebody and you think they're 16 in violation of curfew and, you know, and you say, how old are you? And they're like, well, I don't have to tell you. What are you going to do? I mean, some people you might know are young, but some people you cannot tell. And that's, I mean, these are not unreasonable questions to ask. The unreasonable part about, you know, if you like Black people, you'll vote against this. Well, that's a bit much. But this will become very important because after having gotten a talking to from the socialists for, golly, like, I don't know, half an hour at this point. And I skipped a lot of those clips because I didn't think we needed to hear them all. That usual stuff. The council is, like, on trigger. Like, they feel like they're being criticized, attacked, being called racists and don't care about young people and they're, you know, Orwellian, totalitarians and all of this kind of stuff. So we're going to go to conversation, which is more questions at this point by the city council. Allison Patton, council chair.
All right, so turning to council for questions, and we will start with Councilman Bear.
Of course we'll start with Councilman Bear, because why wouldn't we? get ready for the Charles Bear experience, okay? So Charles Bear is going to ask questions, and he decides to start here.
Well, thank you, Madam President. Let's not forget about the 2009 killing of Victor Steen.
What? Let's not forget about something that happened 17 years ago. Okay. All right. Where are you going?
So Black 17-year-old who approximately 1:50 a.m. was riding his bike was followed by a white PPD officer who attempted to tase him from the window of his vehicle and then ran him over, killing him. For his behavior, Mr. Ard, Officer Ard, got moved to a different beat in the city of Pensacola. That's the only discipline he really got, because apparently there wasn't a policy that you weren't supposed to tase someone from the window of your vehicle. If this curfew goes into place, we can probably see more things like this, where children are run over. He was 17.
What? You know, what you see sometimes in politics is a person says a thing with a straight face, and if you are a normal person, you think, well, they seem serious about this. They don't seem like an insane person. They don't seem like a fool. He's putting words together in appropriate grammatical structure, and he seems to be marshaling facts. So, you know, you tend to gaslight yourself a little bit. Like, am I the crazy one who doesn't see any connection at all between a police officer tasing a 17-year-old who I've been told had a gun on him, by the way, you know, and who then fell down because that's what you do. And as we heard from, who was it, Bob Johnson, I forget, or Chip Simmons, one of them said that, you know, about half of the injuries that you get from tasers were from people falling down, you know, or 90%, really high, you know. And then it makes it sound like he tased him and didn't get the result he wanted, so he ran him over. Well, obviously it was an accident. You know, you tased him, which, yes, tasering somebody from the window of your car is maybe not the best protocol. But it's a terrible tragedy. But Charles Bear makes it sound like almost like it was done on purpose. And then his response is, look, 17 years ago, this is what happened. And if we have a curfew, more kids are going to get run over. What? I mean, just what are you talking about? That's your starting point? PPD is just waiting for a curfew ordinance so it can run down teenagers with their cruisers? What is wrong with you?
You know, after the events that happened with the shooting, you know, my knee-jerk reaction was, we need a curfew.
Okay.
And I even reached out to staff, and I found out the mayor was working on one. And then I really started to think about it. And as a parent of three kids who are all over 18 now, I thought I knew better than other parents when I thought about a curfew. I thought, well, maybe they're just not good parents, and maybe we need to do it for them. That's not true.
Well, I mean, it can be true. It might not always be true. You know, you might have a kid who's out to eat as his own kid goes out to eat after going to PLT for, you know, play practice, as he said. But, you know, not every parent is quite as aware as a Charles Bear. And you have other parents that didn't even know where their kids were on July 4th or July 5th, even, you know, after midnight. So, you know, it's fair enough to recognize that some parents are different than others. And by the way, the ordinance has all this stuff in there about with parental authority, with parental notes, that kind of stuff. So I'm not sure kind of where all the arguments are, but, you know, he says,
I don't believe a juvenile curfew ordinance is even ready for passage. I think, if anything, the council should have had a workshop on it and not just had the mayor write an ordinance. I really think the legislative branch should write the legislation.
Okay, so Charles has a longstanding irritation with the nature of the charter and not feeling like he has enough power and nobody listens to Charles and he loses a lot of votes, 7-1 or, well, 6-1 or 5-2. As the votes he's going to lose at city council that night were 5-2 and 6-1. And he gets frustrated with the mayor because the mayor doesn't talk to him. I don't know. It could be because you are rude to staff consistently and you're arrogant and you berate people and you say things like, you know, the cops are just waiting to run black kids over. You know, could be there's reasons that some people don't want to talk to you as much. But okay, so he says it should have been up to us to figure this out. Well, it's fine. You know, the mayor can bring ordinances. The council can bring ordinances. The mayor's brought an ordinance which looks a lot like other cities' curfew ordinances. And is, in fact, as Adam Cobb is later going to say, is actually a lot nicer in some ways. It's not criminally oriented. The ones that have been struck down were criminally oriented. That was one of the things the socialists brought up. And so, you know, they've been working on this for a long time. It's actually been in the works since before Eric Winstrom was the chief. It just hasn't ever been brought to council. So they've been looking at the need for a curfew ordinance for a long time, since at least Eric Goss, and maybe before that. It's just finally here, and, you know, it doesn't, there's no reason it has to be done by the mayor or has to be done by council. It can go either way, but he's irritated that it doesn't go through them. And then he's got a lot of other practical questions, and we'll get to that. But he's kind of obsessed with this idea that, you know, the parents are the ones, and he's right, but what do you do when the cops are standing around with 500 teenagers after midnight and they don't know what to do because there is no legal authority for them to do anything if they haven't actually committed a crime? And that's why Eric Winstrom, the chief of police, is going to say, we need this ordinance. So we're in part one of at least a three-part series. So trust me, there's a lot more to come. I just wanted you to get a bit of the flavor for the first installation, but we'll be back to this at 6 o'clock. Eventually, they do, well, I don't want to, should I tell you, PJ, should I pay him off now a little bit with a little bit of news?
Maybe tease him.
All right. So we'll come back to this. Let's just say, whatever you think city council might do wisely, they did not do. I'll put it that way. And apparently at the intellectual leading of Charles Baer, not only Charles, but largely, and the socialists. So they're leading the charge to not do what the police have asked them to do. 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Is your house your dream home? Or at least, is it on the way there? Maybe it's time for a change. Maybe all you really need to turn your house into your dream home is an appliance upgrade. When it's time for an upgrade, then it's time to visit Topps Appliance in Milton. They're locally owned and operated. They have top-of-the-line freezers, refrigerators, dishwashers, and stoves to dependable washers and dryers. Topps Appliance carries the brands you know and trust, like GE, Hotpoint, Speed Queen, and more. Topps Appliance in Milton. They offer delivery and installation, something you won't get from the big box stores. And they have many items in stock, so you can take your new appliance the very same day. Topps Appliance. Check them out at toppsappliance.net on Highway 90 in Milton, just east of Stewart Street. Turning your house into your dream home. Topps Appliance.
You're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You've still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight illnesses like pneumococcal pneumonia and RSV. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine and can help protect you from getting really sick. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. See more at PfizerForAll.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Hear that? That's Alka-Seltzer, the sound of fast heartburn relief. Because when heartburn hits, you want something that works fast. Quick! Alka-Seltzer. Alka-Seltzer effervescent tablets start neutralizing stomach acid in seconds, so nothing works faster for heartburn relief. Next time, when that burning feeling comes on strong, don't wait. Quick! Alka-Seltzer. Try Alka-Seltzer. Use as directed.
Is your business, church organization, civic group, school, or other nonprofit organization having a fundraiser or other community event? Let News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 help you spread the word. Send us your information to be presented on our Here's What's Happening weekly announcements. We look forward to hearing from you. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
You're busy. You just need to know what's happening.
What's happening?
Pensacola right now
with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave?
Good morning, 528 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. This is why there's value in the podcast, because I know a lot of you aren't even hearing me live right now. You're hearing me later on this morning or this afternoon, and you want to go back and grab the, if you're listening later, you already grabbed it, but you can always listen to the podcast for the show. PJ does a great job of putting all these up on newsradio923.com. They're also available in the app, the News Radio Pensacola app, so you can listen to them later, but man, this business with the city council, and I have a lot for city council to go through, and we'll be doing a lot today, probably tomorrow, probably the day after that, a little bit, because I don't want to spend all day, every day talking about Pensacola City Council. But in this case, it was a huge meeting. It was like a 5.5-hour meeting. It was a marathon. 437-1620. Weird little, not little for them, but, you know, little enough in the grand scheme of things. But we had an Arleigh Burke class destroyer that lost power for several days in the middle of being deployed. And so the men on board, women on board, you know, no power means all kinds of things that you don't have access to, right? The, you know, no power in the South China Sea while you're on patrol or, you know, on station, you know, and that's bad. Navy spokesman Christopher Thomas told military.com that while conducting routine operations July 24th, the Indo-Pacific, Arleigh Burke class guided missile destroyer USS Benfold, DDG-865, quote, reported an engineering casualty involving its generators, meaning a loss of power. Benfold is an Arleigh Burke class. It's, you know, missiles primarily is its operation, a 10,000-ton destroyer, crew of between 329 and 359 personnel. No injuries to crew who demonstrated resilience, grit, professionalism, and unwavering steadiness in their response. That's good. Benfold received direct support from the George Washington Carrier Strike Group to include meals from Ticonderoga class guided missile destroyer USS Robert Smalls. But they're saying, like, you know, this is power. That's water. That's, you know, toilets. That's everything that you think of a ship operating. And, you know, a ship's not really designed to operate without that stuff for any period of time. So they had to tow it back into a Subic Bay, and they had to work on it, and eventually, a couple days later, got it back, you know, operating properly. But, hey, you know, being in the Navy's not always bonbons and rainbows.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa, ramping up the war on Iran's bank account.
President Trump announced what he is calling economic D-Day against Iran. Posting to True Social, no one has given the Islamic Republic of Iran a greater opportunity to make a deal than me. Tragically for them, they have failed to take it. Therefore, today I am announcing the most crushing economic operation ever taken against any country. This will be economic warfare and isolation on an unprecedented scale.
Fox's Trey Inks in Tel Aviv. The price for a gallon of regular gas on average from AAA going up 2 cents overnight, landing at $4.10 a gallon. For the first time, supporters of Lindsey Clancy, accused of murdering her three children, will dress in pink and stand hand in hand in silence this morning outside the courthouse in Plymouth, Massachusetts. The defense could rest its case today. Her attorney will not say if she will take the stand. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It is 5:31 at News Radio 92.3, 78 degrees right now. We've got partly cloudy skies. We'll check our forecast from Channel 3 and Brooke Richardson. That's up in just a few minutes. A 20-year-old Alabama man has been critically injured after his truck ran off the road and hit a power pole in Escambia County on Wednesday evening. Troopers say the man was ejected from the truck during a crash on Bower Road near Highway 98. He was taken to the hospital. The roadway was blocked due to a downed wire and a fire hazard. George Stone Technical College is now offering fully online GED preparation classes for anybody looking to earn their high school equivalency. The program is self-paced with expert instructors, interactive lessons, and personalized support included. Enrollment is open year-round. The class costs $30. Students can apply online at gstc.escambiaschools.org. And will also need to take a placement test. Santa Rosa County continues a pattern of county commission turnover this election cycle, with two new commissioners set to take office in November. And this is the fourth straight cycle since 2020. Dean Light defeated incumbent Ray Eddington in District 4. Jeff Ates won the Republican nomination in District 2 over incumbent Kerry Smith. Integrity Florida's Ben Wilcox says it's a pattern of broad voter frustration with the government. Light says infrastructure and transportation topped concerns during his campaign. He says he's hoping to rebuild trust between the commission and residents. Governor Ron DeSantis has announced up to $60 million in awards through the Florida Cancer Innovation Fund. The largest of those awards, $2 million, went to the University of South Florida for brain tumor research. The fund was established 3 years ago. They plan to distribute another $70 million next year. Senator Rick Scott is calling for an investigation into a climate agreement between California and China. Scott and other lawmakers sent a letter to the Attorney General and Secretary of State questioning a partnership Governor Gavin Newsom announced with Shanghai 3 years ago. Scott argues the deal likely violates the Constitution by intruding on federal foreign policy authority. They accuse Newsom of serving Chinese interests at the expense of American workers. Well, a tree fell on a home in the Brent area Wednesday as storms moved through the area. Fire crews responded around 5:12 p.m. to the 6900 block of Burrell Lane. There were no injuries or fatalities reported due to that incident. Well, if you thought grocery prices are high, they're still rising.
Grocery prices continue to climb in the state. Florida's tied with Maryland and Oregon for the sixth highest average weekly grocery cost in the nation. While overall inflation has slowed, the price of groceries continue to rise at a steady pace. Now, that was despite the dip in inflation for July. Those prices still rising, just at a slower pace. Chris Bryan, News Radio 92.3.
And right now, it is 5:35. We've got 75 degrees with partly cloudy skies. And let's get a look at our forecast from Channel 3.
We are going to be seeing a 50% chance of those showers and thunderstorms today. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies, high near 95 degrees with a heat index value in the triple digits. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 80 degrees. Going into Friday, another 50% chance of those showers and thunderstorms, high near 96 degrees. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 80 degrees. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now, we've got again 75, partly cloudy. Our next news at 6. Breaking news, anytime it happens. This is News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Did you know? Florida West Economic Development Alliance exists to deliver measurable results for Escambia County. Our focus is simple, growing local businesses and attracting new ones that create jobs, increase wages, and bring private investment to our community. Every project is evaluated on its ROI to taxpayers. Florida West works to ensure Escambia County remains competitive for high-value employers today and for decades to come. Learn more at FloridaWestEDA.com.
Visit Pensacola is home for all things Pensacola. I'm Nicole Stacy, Vice President of Visit Pensacola. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel this week as we discuss what is next for our community.
Just because it's the end of the summer and the kids are back in school doesn't mean there's not a lot going on in Pensacola. And find out how you can have fun with your family as we head towards fall.
Tomorrow at 9:30, let us show you the way to beach on News Radio 92.3.
This is a statement from the National Weather Service.
September 2020. The National Hurricane Center predicted Hurricane Sally would come ashore in Mississippi.
A hurricane warning has now been issued.
But then, Sally made a right turn and surprised us by coming ashore here with a destructive power we have not seen since Hurricane Ivan, which is why you should keep your radio on News Radio 92.3 for all the latest watches, warnings, and full team coverage should the storm make that unexpected change of course. News Radio 92.3.
The primary election is over.
If you're looking at the city of Pensacola mayor race, D.C. Reeves has 51% of the vote. Alicia Trawick has 21% of the vote.
News Radio 92.3 full team coverage with Chris and Austin provided up-to-the-minute local and state election results.
I'm so happy to welcome David Williams into the show. Hey, David, how you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
I'm looking at your numbers. You have 59.12% of the vote.
News Radio 92.3.
I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News, and at the request of the 53% vote getter in the primary, demolishing a field of five other contestants, Mayor ACDC Reeves is back with us. Congratulations, Mr. Mayor, on your big victory yesterday.
Thank you so much. Growing up playing sports, I answered to AC or DC or whatever combination of initial that my coach thought of. So it always resonates with me.
And by the way, you know, I think I was the one who picked the DC talk music originally because I thought that was kind of perfect for you. And you said, all right, it's a new term. It's not yet a new term, but it's coming. So let's switch it up. I'm going for AC/DC, which I kind of like. Does this mean that you're here to do all kinds of nefarious black ops kinds of things now that you've been reelected so handily?
I'm sure I'll read about that on Facebook in a few months. But for now, no. It's merely the homage to, again, every initial that I hear. And we're celebrating this morning in Carline at school drop-off right now.
Oh, that's great.
I had to write a couple notes of why Caroline won't have her homework done last night.
She was too busy getting hugged by her dad on Channel 3 last night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she did a great job, and yesterday was social studies. Just all day waving signs at Baby Park and entertaining the crowds at the party. So anyway, great night last night.
Can I just say first? I'm going to say this because I actually had talked to you about this already, but we have been using the Baby Park Senior Center. I hate to say, but because my wife is 50 and I'm 55, there's all kinds of great activities there, and we play like pickleball at Vickery, and like there are so many great facilities and opportunities in the city of Pensacola. We picked up kickball last fall playing with the city. So like there are so many different things to do. So kudos. I mean, I know you didn't invent any of that stuff necessarily, but you oversee all that operation, and you know it's great. The other thing, just a kudos to you, and you know Tanya Vaden does such a great job. But the other one was, I would love to see if maybe. There could be just a little more positivity toward the city now on social media. I mean, I get politics. Politics is war by other means. I get it. But I saw so much ridiculous stuff. It felt like to me, if you breathed, breathing was evil. You know, like, you know, there was one of the metal fronds from the street cleaner was left in my street. Why doesn't DC Reeves have recyclable metal fronds? Why does DC Reeves hate, you know, like, any way you could possibly get attacked for the most obscene thing. This thing about the rainstorm on Sunday or Saturday, like, dude, what are you talking about? It did way better than it's ever done before, and you're complaining. Like, I would just love to see some balance and reasonability online. I just, personal opinion.
Yeah, and listen, it's part of it, and especially when you get into campaign season where, you know, ultimately, you know, there's especially from an incumbent, non-incumbent standpoint, you're going to get a lot of big promises, right, of vision but it doesn't really replace accomplishment in terms of, you know, having to be in it, good, bad, and things going well and things not going the way that you hoped. But, you know, that was my message to all of our supporters at our event last night, was to say, hey, we can say that I can be a better mayor. There's no doubt about it. I think we can be better community members as a city. We can, our police can have the opportunity for improvement, our fire. Everybody, if we think we're perfect, then we're not very self-aware. That being said, that doesn't mean, and what I'm so appreciative of with the vote last night is, that also doesn't mean that we have to tear down our city or say that everything that happens in our city is bad. Forget the mayor's office or city hall. I just mean what that vote tells me is that decisions aren't made on social media. They're made in living rooms, and they're made when you're FaceTiming your kid from college, hoping that you have opportunity to move home. And so we can still serve all 55,000 people. We can still make investments across our city in every corner of our city. We can still do all those things and know that we're not perfect and that we're always working hard to be as good as we can be without saying that this place stinks and everything's terrible. Because certainly that's, with that vote last night, is not what our citizens are saying. What they're saying is we're going in the right direction, and let's just try to be a little bit better tomorrow than we were today.
You know, and we're going to talk about this in a second, but I have said this many times, and it's a hard thing for a lot of politicians to hear, whether at the city council or the county commission level, but just because a group of angry 25-year-olds or 30 or 60-year-olds shows up and there's, you know, 15 or 20 or 30 of them, that is not the 55,000 people in the city. That's not the 330,000 people in the county. That's a small group of motivated people, and you got to learn to listen to them that way. And I thought that showed itself nowhere better than with the curfew vote last week. We'll talk about that in a second. Mayor, I've said this several times. I just repeat for people who are just joining us. I am very concerned that some of our elected leaders, city council falls in this category, county commission also sometimes falls in this category, just because a group of highly motivated, politically engaged people, often socialists recently, show up and scream about data centers or flock cameras or a curfew that they clearly do not understand and have not read, And then they cave on a vote. Like, the police chief is begging them, give me this tool to solve a problem, and they won't even vote on it. I was embarrassed. And I have not covered this yet. I'll cover it probably tomorrow in detail, because I thought some of the things that got said were just, like, what are you doing? But this, you got to remember, there is another 55,000 people out there who are not here tonight, right?
That's right. And, you know, I think the toughest thing at the local level, and I always remind our state and federal politicians, is I would say, listen, we go to town halls. So when a decision's made in Tallahassee or Washington, D.C., decisions are made and answered for at the local level. That being said, I absolutely agree with you. Frankly, and I think, you know, with some specific council members especially, decisions are made by a Facebook comment or a reaction to. And we've got to do more research than that. And we have to be more respectful, I think, of all 55,000 people than just what's the last thing I read on the internet before I came to this meeting. And the vast majority of our council does take all of that into consideration. But we try to do a really good job of saying, hey, you know, we hear these two or three or four people, because it's hard sometimes, because you don't want to be dismissive of anybody who shows up. I love engaged people,
right?
But the difference, you said it best just a second ago, there's a big difference between engaged people because you came to a meeting and engaged people who, like, read the ordinance or that, like, actually, like, read the article that they're commenting on. Things like that's what I mean by engaged. There's nothing better for community, whether they agree with me or disagree with me, than people that say, hey, man, I read the notes, and Mayor, I got an issue with this, or I got a problem with that. There are many things that we address at the citizen level, at the city council level, that doesn't get hacked out in the meeting. It could be through email. Hey, great idea. Thank you, you know, for that. That a lot of listening happens in this constructive level before something gets to a vote. And frankly, that's really my disappointment with the curfew. And again, I know you'll cover tomorrow, is, you know, all of the council members that had concerns at the last minute did not express any of those concerns to us in the almost 2 weeks leading up to this, that our team worked really hard. And so we're always open for interpretation, for how do we make this better. We should always be nimble and flexible like that. But, you know, it's a little discouraging and frankly, I think a little disrespectful to our police chief and to our city attorney's office that worked extremely hard. And the impression that this was knee-jerk or that this was sloppily put together is just not true. I would love to hear ahead of time, if a council member has any type of issue, they don't have to read a Word document, you know, diatribe before they've even heard from the chief, which is obviously what Councilman Baer did during that vote. And so that's disappointing. But you know what? You know, we're going to certainly bring it back in September, and we're open to, again, we're open to any type of conversation about it. And so there's just a big difference, Andrew, between engagement because you came and said things that weren't facts at a meeting versus engagement through email, through town halls, through city council,
right,
where the goal is that we have a better Pensacola.
On the land development code rewrite approval, I just want to make sure I understand one thing. Trees became a big conversation point, and the way I understood this is, in the process of rewriting the LDC, there was some, you know, reshuffling, reordering, reprioritizing, and a couple of key changes on the trees portion. But that the big questions about tree replacement and tree size and costs were really going to come from you and Councilman Moore at a future, that we're kind of creating the placeholder for those changes. We're not accomplishing everything in this LDC right there. There's a version two coming on the trees. But do I have that basically right?
Exactly.
Okay.
There was already stuff happening in the LDC that were improving some of that ordinance, modernizing some of that ordinance. So none of what Councilman Moore and I are bringing forward is conflicting that. It actually is just, it's really some further specifications as it pertains to the trees that we love most in this community, the heritage oaks, the southern live oaks, and making sure that those are really protected the way that they need to be. And so we didn't want to stop the other process that had already started, but coming right behind it will be some of those additional modifications.
The Veterans Memorial Park restrooms, to me, is a great example of how government can try to do a thing and try to do it sort of right, and then it just kind of over time, it can become such a big jumble, and why projects ultimately fail. You guys have actually gotten something done, which, of course, was not good enough for some people, even though where would the money come from to actually solve this? And it's as if you guys didn't want to do more and you were not trying, you know, I don't know. I get frustrated because we are finally going to have restrooms at Veteran Memorial Park. Are they the ideal, the dream, the wish list? No, no, no. But will they be better than what we've got now? Yes, that's often the result of government.
Exactly. Sure. You know, it's a prefab building. And if we had every, you know, architectural thing that we wanted in it, not only would it be over budget, it wouldn't be allowed per flood laws. I mean, we weren't going to put a bathroom on stilts like it's at Pensacola Beach. And so to do that, we had to do some very specific things. So you don't get to check all the boxes, unfortunately. But here's what I can say. We've never been more engaging and more collaborative with a non-city organization to make this happen. And I've said it's an emotional issue over 12 years. But all I can speak to is the last 3.5. And what we've done in the last 3.5 is get all the funding for it. And we just got an approval for the building, and you're going to actually have two bathrooms going in. There's some conversation, Andrew, I want to clarify too on, well, why didn't we get four bathrooms? The reality is, number one, there's only one park out of 95 I can think of that has two bathrooms in it, in the city, that doesn't have a community center, for example. At Sanders Beach is the only place I can think of that has two bathrooms. Secondly, when there's the major events like Veterans Day, Memorial Day, those awesome events that VMP puts on there, two or four bathrooms isn't enough.
Right.
So you know, I don't know where that came from, that we should have four bathrooms. That doesn't solve your major event problem, that you're going to still have to bring in bathrooms from the outside. But, you know, so we certainly, I think our data shows us that two bathrooms is more than enough. And I'm just looking forward to getting this thing done. And I'm sure that the MPA is too, after talking about it for 12 years.
Yeah, and again, I think in the end, nobody's getting what we really wish we could have. But good Lord, the trouble of getting here, take anything.
Right.
You know, you're not getting a BMW, but, you know, a Toyota's fine. You know, it's going to be fine.
That's right.
And you got some other things. We don't really have time to get into it all. But, you know, I thought last night you made a comment on Channel 3 that, you know, all these big projects that are kind of in process, you want to finish them up. The Burdon project, obviously, it's a huge win. The airport project is a big deal. The Reverb project, you know, Baptist, you know, even getting a Superfund site as a possible location for the inland port, right, which I know will do a lot of things for us because, you know, people don't really realize that the port is used so much for non-port things. And if you had an inland version of the port, you could do a lot with that, including for, you know, GE Vernova. There's a lot of things in the process, and you know, as always, we're out of time to talk about it, but you know, big things, trying to work on getting them through to fruition. We always like to end with a bit of a lightning round, you know, quick questions for you. So first one for you is, if you can get rid of any one insect, wave your, you know, AC/DC Reeves magic wand, get rid of one insect, which one do you get rid of?
I mean, you know, this time of year, it's got to be mosquitoes.
I mean, I'm in the same boat with you.
Horsefly was tough, you know, back when I was back in my canoeing days. You know, I would say horsefly, but I'm going to go with mosquito. That's got to be the number one, isn't it?
I would say, but you know, people have disagreements. When you go to the ice cream shop, do you sample? And if so, how many samples is allowed before it becomes like theft?
I'm maximum one sample. I just can't do it. I kind of feel. I feel uncomfortable. It's like a Larry David moment, you know, if you're to get, like, the multiple samples, you know.
So is it because you feel like you're stealing or because you feel like it indicates that you don't know what you want?
You know, actually, honestly, it's the time pressure that I'm waiting on.
Okay.
You know, with somebody behind me, you know, I was like, man, I got to get it, especially in this job, you know, that someone will say, man, the mayor was taking up all the time, you know, up front. So one sample maximum for me.
I gotcha. Very good. I'm a 2-3, by the way, just, you know, if it helps.
I'm behind you in line then. Yeah.
Okay. And now I promise not to tell PPD when I talk to him tomorrow, but do you ever drive with your knees? Like you're holding something in your hands temporarily,
yes,
but you have to keep keep the wheel steady with the knee. Do you ever do that?
Only outside the city limits and or Escambia County or where anybody knows me, they can call me. So
that's a yes. Okay, fair enough.
Only is where I drive like that.
I gotcha. All right. DC Reeves, mayor of Pensacola, just got, you know, reelected last night with a 53% win over a field of six. Congratulations. Always good to talk to you. We'll talk to you again next week, sir.
Absolutely, Andrew. Thank you so much.
For sure. It's 5:53 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. The Subaru Lot to Love event is going on now at Anderson Subaru, which brings special summer savings to some of our most in-demand Subaru models, Ascent, Outback, and Crosstrek. Right now, get 0.9% financing for 75 months on Ascent models with flexible seating for up to 8 passengers. Or how about 1.9% APR financing for 75 months on the completely redesigned Outback? That's 75-month financing on Ascent and Outbacks. or get 2.9% APR financing for 72 months on the versatile Subaru Crosstrek. Low rates and long terms on the most reliable and most loved cars around. Discover new places to love during the Subaru A Lot to Love event. Going on now through August 31st at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Subaru for you, Subaru for you. Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Hurricane season is here, and Gulf Breeze Natural Gas helps provide the most reliable energy source. There are advantages to having natural gas in your home or business. Major storms typically do not cause widespread outages because gas lines are buried and protected. Most appliances, including cooking and hot water, still work during electrical outages. A gas generator gets everything back up and running within 30 seconds. That's the length of this commercial. Learn more about how to be best prepared at GulfBreezeNaturalGas.com.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us tomorrow at 9 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 is accepting applications for employment. Periodically, we have openings in sales, business, news, promotions, engineering, production, and programming. We'll keep your application for consideration when such an opening occurs. We also provide internships for qualified students. Apply online at News Radio 92.3 or at our studios at 7251 Plantation Road between 8:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. ADX Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
The five-day outlook is calling for intense flooding, followed by the end of the world!
You don't need panic. You need information. News Radio 92.3.
Huh. Plan A taught you the five-point palm exploding heart technique.
Of course he did.
Good morning, 5:56 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Couple of interesting notes here. One is, you know, on military stuff, obviously, you know, we are the cradle and the kindergarten grade school of naval aviation. We don't talk about Whiting as much as we should, but, you know, we train a lot of pilots at Whiting, all the helicopter pilots, and what is it, two-thirds of your fixed wing get their training there, and the rest get them at Corpus Christi. So anything related to carriers is always, you know, I always try to pay attention. Well, the President Trump, who he had kind of signaled this before, but now he has actually instructed that the modern aircraft carriers, you know, the Ford-class aircraft carriers that took so long to get them rolled out, that they are actually having to go back, the next ones that are going to be built, not the current ones that are in building right now, but like the next ones after that in the class are going to have to be redesigned to go back to the steam-powered catapults instead of the electromagnetic catapults, the EMALS system, like the Ford-class has now. And he kind of has signaled this, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe that's also the same power system that works on the elevators that take the planes up and down from storage up to the deck. And this is an enormous cost that's going to have to be borne, obviously. And, you know, there's still a process between now and implementation, but it's not a very long process. But, you know, we're talking about massive expense to renovate this back to the old technology. The Gerald Ford is in service. The John F. Kennedy is in sea trials. It'll be deployed in 27. The Enterprise, we can expect that one in 2031. It's the Doris Miller is CVN-81, expected in 2034. That's the first one that's supposed to go back to having the steam-based. Then the William J. Clinton, of all things, 82, and the George W. Bush, 83. I know that may shock some of you that those are the names of the next couple of carriers, but they are. So my own view of this is, first of all, Trump says all kinds of crazy things. He gets all kinds of weird ideas. I didn't think that this system was working all that well, and they had a lot of issues. In fact, if I remember correctly, they launched the Ford without these things functioning completely, and they've been working on it ever since. But I thought it had actually gotten to where it was working right and reliably and all of that. And so now to go back, in addition to being, you know, kind of weird to abandon the system once it's finally working, and the cost of redesigning all of these future aircraft carriers with that in mind, including the Doris Miller, which is kind of already on its way. So I actually have a somebody here in studio with me today who's just kind of listening for fun. Clint is was on the forestall. And worked in the Command Combat Information Center, the CIC. And I was just kind of curious. You know, we only have like 30 seconds, but what do you think about telling them to go back to the, you know, the Steam system instead of the email system?
I just believe that the tried and true of the steam catapults, we rarely ever had any problems with steam catapults on the USS Forrestal. I think it's a good idea.
They just work.
They just work. You just don't mess with something that works all the time, just about.
And I was surprised we changed because it had worked for so long. You know, same like we have, you know, the nuclear generators. I mean, we're great for so long. Don't innovate. Just keep doing what works,
just
you know?
Do what you do.
So, but, I, you know, going back to them, I don't think I'm in a position to really evaluate it, but it just seems like a weird decision now.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
These maniacs are on the ropes. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. That's President Trump's latest message on Iran, calling for an economic D-Day that will cripple them as talks stall over Iran's nuclear program and Strait of Hormuz shipping.
Posting to True Social, no one has given the Islamic Republic of Iran a greater opportunity to make a deal than me. Tragically for them, they have failed to take it. Therefore, today I am announcing the most crushing economic operation ever taken against any country. This will be economic warfare and isolation on an unprecedented scale.
Iran responded on X. The foreign minister wrote the so-called economic D-Day is a diversion from America's own crisis and surging debt. But Fox's Trey Yingst also reports from Tel Aviv.
Regional intelligence sources tell Fox News that there are growing indications of economic hardship inside of Iran as a result of the U.S. naval blockade and economic isolation. Reports indicate that inflation in Iran has reached 89%.
Iran referenced American debt. It has hit $40 trillion for the first time as interest payments continue to grow. It only took 5 months to go from $39 trillion to $40. North Korea has launched another missile test hours after President Trump said he's hoping to meet leader Kim Jong-un again this year. And after the president scaled back U.S. military exercises with South Korea, he says they're too hostile to North Korea.
I thought that was very insulting to somebody that, frankly, has been, during my term at least, very well behaved.
A royal return coming to Britain. Prince Harry and wife Meghan are moving back.
The news that the Duke and Duchess of Sussex are relocating from California to the UK came as a surprise even to King Charles. It's understood the king was only told of his son's impending return on Sunday. We don't know exactly.